Today, remembering one of the legendary voices of broadcast news. For three decades, from the late 1940s to the 1970s, Eric Sevride offered regular commentaries on the CBS Evening News. These were among the most admired essays in journalism. His longtime colleague and our commentator, Walter Cronkite, reflects on Sevride and an era when TV took time to think.
Direct from our newsroom in Washington, this is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite and Marvin Kalb in Washington.
For 14 years running, that introduction would summarize a shifting menu of reporters and datelines from around the world. But at least one night every week, it would end with this.
And Eric Sevride in Washington.
After all the stories were filed, it was Eric Sevride who would provide the coda, 2 minutes or so of calm, in which he would try to interpret America to itself. His explanations were seldom simple and never flashy. There was only his face hunched between his shoulders. Like a schoolmaster's, it was impassive, stoic, sometimes brooding, never betraying a noticeable emotion. Eric was content to let language do his work. Over the 14 years he appeared on the Evening News, he was the most brilliant and widely recognized news analyst in American television. In his farewell essay, he offered a brief self-definition.
Mine has been here an unelected, unlicensed, uncodified office and function. The rules are self-imposed. These were a few. Not to underestimate the intelligence of the audience and not to overestimate its information. To elucidate when one can more than to advocate. To retain the courage of one's doubts as well as one's convictions in this world of dangerously passionate certainties. To comfort oneself in times of error with the knowledge that the saving grace of the press, print, or broadcast is its self-correcting nature.
He covered the news, but with the vision of a historian and the sensibility of a philosopher. But behind the philosopher lay the career of a reporter. Eric came to CBS in the summer of 1939 at the invitation of Ed Murrow. Murrow was in London, Sevride in Paris. When the Nazis marched into Paris in June 1940, Eric was among the last American reporters to leave the collapsing empire. His dramatic broadcasts of the fall of France and his escape to England made him famous.
Hello, America. It's almost midnight here. I've just come into the studio after what was for me a very wild automobile trip for about 100 miles down toward the sea. It's been an attempt tonight to find transportation either back to England or to the United States, and my effort was to get at least part of the Columbia staff off tonight or tomorrow morning.
After the war, Eric published his first book, Not So Wild a Dream, would bring him literary recognition and become one of the most important memoirs of World War II. But finding a place for such a voice at CBS would take time. The reporter in Eric pulled in one direction, the philosopher in another. He was all intellect, no emotion. It was a quality that could make him seem chilly and distant to viewers coming to prefer warmth and informality. By the early 60s, Eric was convinced that CBS had no useful role for him. He might have gone elsewhere, but in September 1963, the Evening News expanded to 30 minutes. Within a few weeks, Eric began the essays that would help make the program the most watched newscast in America. CBS News President Dick Salant once said that the special measure of Eric's writing was that his last sentence could rarely be predicted from his first. The same could be said of his thinking. You didn't always know where it might lead. It was a quality that annoyed liberals as much as conservatives. This was because his liberal politics were steadied by a conservative temperament. No issue frustrated ideologues more than Eric's thinking on the Vietnam War. He saw it initially in terms of World War II and the Cold War tradition of containment. But after he went to Vietnam in the spring of 1966, Eric began to see the darker dimensions of the war. He expressed a growing understanding of the opposition in his essays and an increasing doubt about administration policy.
Vietnam is the old story, says the administration. Simple aggression, part of a pattern we should have learned long ago when the Japanese advanced in Manchuria, when Hitler began threatening Europe's frontiers. This is a profound misreading of history, says the opposition. The 60s are not the 30s. Then we had great allies abroad. Today we have no substantial allies.
That was in December 1966. But by the beginning of 1968, the argument was essentially over in Erich's mind. Skepticism had settled into conviction. He not only challenged the policy, but the honesty of the government.
The falling domino theory also applies in the realm of mind and spirit. Toppling truth, reason, and language can, in the end, topple faith, until the American people place no more credence in the summaries, analyses, and predictions of their own leaders than the Vietnamese people place in the statements of theirs.
If Erich disliked the war, he took no comfort from the radical students who protested it. It was this that bewildered his liberal friends so much. He saw violent protesters as political romantics. He compared the most extreme to terrorists, as much a threat to civilized order as the war they despised.
Terror is purifying, said the leaders of the French Revolution as they beheaded, burned, and drowned their victims. The certain road to virtue. Every political villain in history first persuaded himself that the end justifies the means. Nothing but ends justify means, but they do not justify any means. Where the line is drawn among means is the determinant between civilized life and savagery. Inadmissible means devour principle and corrupt their users, often forever. And only in degree are the Arab guerrillas or the Viet Cong terrorists different from middle-class Western student militants who smash up a campus building. Western student or Arab commando both possess the totalitarian state of mind.
I suspect Erich took some pride in offending both hawks and doves. He championed civil rights, but he didn't believe that liberalism required him to feel guilty or that it should oblige him to assume that all cultures are of equal value. Some were better, he felt, and Western society was the best. Shortly before he retired from CBS, I asked him, what about those peoples of the third
world, Erich? What's going to happen to them?
I refuse to feel guilty about their poverty. I don't think we did it to them. In fact, look at Black Africa. There's very little there that is worth much in 20th century terms. The wealth that spreads around the world today all comes from the Western democracies plus Japan.
In many ways, Erich was an elitist who sought out the views of other elitists. He hosted a series of primetime conversations with many of the leading thinkers of the time, Walter Lippmann, George F. Kennan, Erich Hoffer, Daniel Moynihan, programs that would be almost unthinkable on a major network today. There were also documentaries, as elegant and shrewd as they were droll. In Our Friends the French in 1965, Erich and his producer Perry Wolff focused on a catalog of frustrations that still seem perfectly contemporary.
I'm Erich Severide. If the unofficial truth has to be told, the French have always had a hidden disdain for Americans, and the Americans have responded in kind to the French. Now, with the highly developed arts of mass communication and mass transportation, we can misunderstand each other faster and more deeply than ever before. What seems to astonish the French is that it's taken us so long to rise to high resentment. The French have been waiting there for us all the time. It was all summed up recently when a friend of both countries said, "Poor France, so far from God and so close to the United States."
France was a familiar topic for Erich. He had gone to Paris after college and worked for the Paris Herald Tribune before joining CBS in August 1939.
Good morning, this is Erich Severide in Paris.
This is Erich's first radio broadcast, and among the last to air while Europe was still at peace.
Well, after a night of wild rumors last night, which proved to be untrue, the French people got up this morning to face one more day of this crisis. Last night's story of general mobilization in Poland were denied this morning officially.
In a matter of hours, German troops would be in Poland and the Second World War would be on. Erich's life as a reporter would never escape its impact. On the 25th anniversary of the war, he talked about it on the evening news. His reflections on the consequences of war still carry weight.
To children today, the war was something in the dusty past as ancient as Caesar. They wonder why their parents are forever using the phrases before the war or after the war. It is because war is a watershed in the life of a nation and a person. Nothing is ever the same again. The last great war crucified some American families and made others rich. It threw up new leaders and broke the careers of some who pretended to be leaders. It broke bodies and hearts and moral values. It poisoned the meaning of existing words and kindled new words and meanings. It invented new ways to kill 1,000 people and to cure fever in a child. It taught us that free men can build anything, pay for anything, endure anything if they have the will to do so. The war that started 25 years ago began 25 years after the First World War had begun. But the lesson was not learned. It wasn't learned because every generation starts life afresh without memory. And because pain and death are not multiplied in the human spirit. Because even 35 million deaths leave an empty place at only one family table. This presumably is what permits life to go on and makes a next time always possible. This is Eric Severide in New York.
And that's the way it is. Monday, August 31st, 1964. This is Walter Cronkite. Good night.
If we don't hear such words today on television, it may be because we've become too comfortable with the spontaneity of banter. And Eric Severide always wrote better than he bantered.
After a 46-year career, Eric Severide retires tonight. To this newsman, he's one of the finest essayists of the century. Here are his parting thoughts.
By my time of life, one has accumulated more allegiances and moral debts than the mind can remember or the heart contain. Millions have listened intently and indifferently, in agreement and in powerful disagreement. Tens of thousands have written their thoughts to me. I will feel always that I stand in their midst. This was Eric Severide in Washington. Thank you and goodbye.
With that broadcast, the art of literate news analysis largely disappeared from nightly television, soon to be replaced by the amusement of rude rant and polarizing diatribe. Eric might agree today with linguist John McWhorter that when society values the impulsive spoken outburst over the reasoned elegance of the written word, the implications for an informed citizenry are dire. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite.